Good morning, everyone. I am so pleased to be able to come and speak to you all the way from Florida. Child Evangelism Fellowship, without question in my mind, is the most strategic, significant ministry, not only in the United States where I live, but also around the world. Before I go into my message about youth are the future, let me just talk a little bit about a background that ultimately brought me to believe that. As a former pastor and now a constitutional litigation attorney, we work with a lot of youth all over the country, from kindergarten all the way through college and in between. We also have dealt with the issues on public school campuses, what's taking place, originally with maybe having a Bible study after school, which are the easy things to deal with now, and now to the more insidious, unbelievable, unimaginable LGBT agenda. I've litigated and defended marriage as the union of a man and a woman in about 70 different cases, including here in California, successfully defending it, understanding and immersing myself into the issues of what this implication actually is, of trying to reinvent God's definition of marriage and family. Until the Supreme Court, of course, overturned those decisions in 2015, and now see the consequences of that decision taking place around the country. Also, as part of Liberty Council, we're not just a legal ministry, we certainly are, and we've represented Child Evangelism Fellowship all over the country, and by God's grace, we have never lost a case that we've taken to litigation for CEF, and that is from the very beginning of the time that we've represented Child Evangelism Fellowship, and we're certainly thankful to the Lord for that. But also, we do a lot with youth. One of the ministries that we have is Covenant Journey, working with Christian college-age students, and the ministry is really designed to strengthen their Christian faith, to take them on a life-changing, spiritual, transformative experience in Israel. One of the things that I see with those individuals, we've had about 1,000 young people that we've taken from about 300 colleges and schools, every conceivable college and university at every level across the country and every conceivable profession and degree is what you have already known since the beginning of your history. And that is the majority of those, vast majority of those young people who are Christian Gideons, leaders on college campuses, leaders now, shortly after they graduate all over the world. They've given their life for the very first time to Jesus Christ before the conclusion of their 13th birthday. Without question, 90% of the young people that we work with have had that experience. They have a second experience, typically, where they deepen that relationship and own that faith, but that initial transformation where they surrender their life to Jesus Christ invariably occurs before the conclusion of their 13th birthday. Having been a dean of the law school for almost 9 years and immersed myself in young people, that's why I believe that Child Evangelism Fellowship is the most strategic ministry on the planet, bar none, because it's focused where the real battle and where the real issues are. My message is that youth are the future. Patricia Warren in a magazine called The Advocate, which is a pro-LGBT magazine, said that whoever captures the youth owns the future. It's just a modern way of saying what Proverbs 22:6 said long ago, train up a child in the ways that he or she will go, and they will not depart from it. It's just a modern way of reiterating that the youth and the hearts and minds of those youth represent our future. And if you want to change, for good or for ill, the future over just simply two short generations, and I'm talking about 24 years, K through 12 times two, all you have to do is focus on the youth. And the entire culture that we have today is different 24 years from now than it is today. And that's for good or for ill. These are the future. And Jesus, no wonder why he focused so much on young people. No wonder why he said it would be better for you to have a millstone hung around your neck and thrown into the depths of the water than for you to be a stumbling block against one of these young people. You know, what we see in our youth today is the invisible war that's taking place. And unfortunately, we don't normally understand, because we drive by a public elementary school and all we see is red brick, a brick building. We may or may not see children going outside, but one of the things that we don't see are PTSD. We don't see the trauma that prisoners in or warriors in warfare actually experience, post-traumatic stress disorder. We don't see that in our neighbor. We don't see the bombs dropping on the schools. We don't see the bullets flying across the playgrounds or in the classroom in the safety of their teacher when they're in that classroom. But yet, those bombs are just as real, and those bullets and the conflict and the warfare is just as real. We know that when we envision real warfare, like the nuclear bomb dropped on Hiroshima or Nagasaki, and we remember that mushroom cloud, we remember those visions and those images of the nuclear blast leveling trees and buildings. And we know, for example, when nuclear waste came outside of the Chernobyl nuclear reactor, that even today, DNA has been affected in a negative way. We know that even that place today is off limits for human habitation. We know that the consequences of physical warfare, because we see it, we remember what happened in 9/11 because we were all riveted to the TV. And we've seen those images replayed, particularly when 9/11 anniversaries come around year after year after year. None of us will ever forget where we were, what we were thinking, and how we felt when we saw that first tower and then the second tower fall to the ground. We won't forget those images of people jumping out of the high rise and the sounds that those in the nearby area heard when those people hit the pavement down below. Because those are real images that are burned in our mind of real war. You know, Satan is a master of war. He's a master of strategy of war. He's been in every strategy of physical conflict from the very beginning. He was there when Alexander the Great wanted to conquer the then known world, and he was in the back room when Adolf Hitler was planning with his people to ultimately eliminate the Jews and others and develop a super white race. He was there and understands consequences of war. When, in fact, you go to West Point, they study previous conflicts of war so that they understand strategies when they go to a new battlefield. They can pull it from the repertoire of their memories and the logs that they have kept about how to go against the enemy because how things have worked or have failed in the past. He is a strategist of war. And when you want to inflict the greatest damage against the one that you vociferously hate, Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior, you go against his children. In the same way that if someone wanted to inflict the biggest disaster and damage to you, he could come after you. But the better way is to come after your children while you watch them being slaughtered, burned, boiled, ripped apart, or tormented and chained in prison and become prisoners of war, or dead, dismembered, disabled, or suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. You wonder why they go out and look up at the sky and all they see is stars when you see the Creator behind it, because they have been prisoners of war. What's happening in our public schools and in the other areas around the country is unimaginable. There's a law that was just passed, 234 of 235 members of the Democratic Party, joined by two Republicans, passed it this week. And now it goes to the United States Senate, where we are fighting it very hard to stop it there. And it is H.R. 5. It is the most radical transformation that this country will ever see in the area of the LGBT agenda. It will affect tax exemption of churches and even of this organization. It does not exempt churches, religious organizations, or anyone. It forces the radical LGBT agenda into every corner of our lives, and there will be no escape from confronting that issue. As the video says, sometimes people run to where the danger is, but oftentimes people just simply ignore it until it's too late. What's happening in our schools, and just to give you one example, a parent contacted us at a school, and going through the growing up phases, the children sometimes question who they are. They get bullied, whatever happens, they go through this, they don't fit in. Lots of different consequences and reasons can result in them questioning who they are and what they are supposed to be, including now when it gets put into their minds that you should not choose your gender. Give it time and you can select it. Just like, don't worry about choosing your profession at kindergarten and first grade. And I'm not exaggerating this. It's not high school and it's not college. Yes, it's there, but it starts in kindergarten. But just hold off. You don't need to question and decide whether you're going to be a doctor, a lawyer, a teacher, a nurse, pastor. Hold that on for later. You need to experiment. Maybe you don't know that you will like this or like that. And so take some time to experiment in these different areas. And the particular way that they are encouraged to experiment is in same-sex activities, that they could either choose to be at some point in time male, if they're biologically male, or female, it really makes no difference what their biology and physiology says, or whether they could be pan, or whether they could be asexual, or whether they could have nothing at all, that they could be referred to as the opposite pronoun from what they've actually been created to be, or get this, that they can be neither male nor female, and who knows, it may be that you're neither male nor you're female, and so therefore your pronoun is not he or she, but they. And believe it or not, that is actually being taught in the public schools, that you can go by the pronoun as they, plural. It's almost demonic that there's multiple demons in a person. But there are people that now are being taught, and it goes further than that. So here's this one girl. She's going through the normal struggles and difficulties of growing up. So she goes to the people in the school, and she says, you know, I think that I'm a boy. And so the school works with this person, gives her some counseling that just simply affirms, doesn't try to counteract or balance her thoughts, but actually affirm that, in fact, maybe she is a boy, and therefore she ought to start dressing or acting like a boy. We're going to use male pronouns for you, and we'll give you a different name, but we're not going to tell mom about this or father about this, because we don't know whether they support you or not, and so consequently, we have to be sensitive to this particular child. And what I'm telling you, by the way, is not an aberration. It is becoming exceptionally widespread. So then they ultimately refer her on to medication, hormone blockers that result in permanent sterility for this young girl without the parents knowing. And when the mom finally finds out and ultimately raises some objections, it's the mom who's not fit to be a parent because the mom is abusing the child for not affirming the child who now is a boy, not a girl. So this young girl, still in the lower parts of her life, not even above age 18 yet, has already had a double mastectomy against her mother's wish. Now you say, how in the world can that happen? I'm telling you, this is not something I'm making up. It's happening over and over and over again. And what happens is, this is a direct attack on God Himself, who created us in His image, male and female. He created us in His image. And it is an open, outright rebellion against Him. The problem, however, is unlike some deviations that you may have in your life, maybe perhaps you've had a difficult time where you ran away from God for a period of time, and then you came to your senses like so many stories of us have been. But now when you do it like this, and you come to your senses, and you wake up one day, you're caught. Because what happens? The doctors who affirmed you, the counselors who affirmed you, now when you go back and you say, you know what? I really am not a boy. I'm really content with how I was made. They have nothing to do with you anymore. The community that embraced you considers you a traitor. They have nothing to do with you. In fact, you are a threat to their very existence. So you are isolated, and beyond being isolated and rejected, you now have irreparable physical damage that you have done to yourself. And now you're trapped. And thus the reason why 40% of those who have gone through these kinds of surgeries end up committing suicide. Thus the reason why Johns Hopkins University decided, when it was the first one to do these kinds of surgeries and treatment, that it was no longer going to do it because it was found to be not beneficial and the incidence of suicide was so high. Now, others who don't go through that have other situations along the spectrum. It's not just in the LGBT agenda, it's also in sexual exploitation. You know, on the video it says 1 in 10 have been sexually abused. 1 in 5 have seen pornography, and that's probably now 1 in 4 have seen pornography on the internet. And when you put that into the mind of a young person, it's different than putting it into a mind of a fully developed 25 and older person, because your brain continues to develop up until about 23 or 24 years of age. It is going through the developmental process. And the thing about what happens to a young mind when you see images is it is branded into your brain. There is a chemical change that happens in your brain where those images are branded into your brain, and you have a very difficult time getting those images out of your brain. Broken homes where they don't even know mom or dad, where they don't understand commitment between a mother and a father as the union of a man and a wife, husband and wife, mom and dad for life. Children are being the target, and the reason why they are the target is because Satan understands. And if I were wanting to inflict the most carnage against my archenemy, and that's what Satan is doing, I would focus on the young people. There is no question that by experience, and also by George Barna's statistical analysis and his book, Transforming Children into Spiritual Champions, he confirms by his own statistics what child evangelism has learned through its experience from 1937 to the present, and that is the most significant time in a child's life is that time between ages 4 and 5 and roughly age 13 to 14. That is when 70 to 80%, if you survey adults, make that decision to give their lives to Jesus Christ. So when we focus evangelism on adults, and certainly we should do that, and we should disciple adults, no question about it. But if that's our focus, we have missed the main time, the most strategic time of our lives, and that is the young people. And that's why Child Evangelism Fellowship, from what I see happening to the young people, is such a significant, powerful, important ministry, bar none. This is the battlefield. You know, and the early founders understood that. The first printed textbook outside of the Bible in America was the New England Primer that taught the ABCs. In Adam's fall, we sinned all. Heaven defined the Bible mind. They understood that religion, knowledge, and morality was necessary to good government and the happiness of mankind. And they put it in the Northwest Ordinance after the 13 colonies began to expand out west. And then, of course, we had prayer taken out of school in the 1960s. But on June 11, 2001, good news actually happened, because it was the Child Evangelism Fellowship Good News Club case that ultimately was decided by the United States Supreme Court the same year, the same few months before 9/11. This was 6/11/2001, months before 9/11/2001. And that's when they said that the Good News Clubs can be in every one of these public elementary schools across the country. And now there's multiple thousands of those. This is where we need to ultimately go to our mission field, because most of those kids in these campuses will never come to our church. We can't just hope and pray that they're just going to walk in the church. They're not going to be transported by mom or dad that could care nothing about you and your church or your faith in Jesus. So we need to take Jesus to them. It is the most significant mission field here in America, our public elementary schools. And around the world, our children, those youngsters, ages 4, roughly through ages 13 to 14. May God bless you, because we live at a time of incredible assaults on children. And they will not decrease. They are increasing. But God has given us the opportunity for this time to ultimately invest our time, our resources, our volunteer time, our money, our prayers into a ministry that is making a difference, that is transforming young boys and girls' lives, the consequences of which are not just their lives, but their moms and dads and their friends, that have a ripple effect. If you want to be involved in a strategic ministry that ultimately rescues these young people from the incredible onslaught of assaults that they are facing beyond what you can even imagine or think, then this ministry, and this is why I am so passionate about it, is a ministry that I believe unequivocally is the most strategic, important ministry on the planet, because it's focused on God's heart. Those innocent young boys and girls that are desperate for Jesus Christ, and you have the opportunity to be able to take Jesus Christ to the mission fields where these youngsters gather and ultimately transform their lives and their future and our future for Jesus Christ. May God bless you. May you, in your prayer and in your time here, ask the Lord how you can be involved in this mission, how you can make a difference and have a ripple effect that grows around the entire planet. God bless you. Thank you very much.